Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's boom. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, happy Boxing Day and welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and The Step Back. Today I'm joined by Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword, The Step Back, a bunch of other places to talk about Cavs Warriors. And Trevor, holy crap, that game was awesome.
Yeah, that was about as good as we could ask for. You know, even if it didn't end with the Cavs winning by one point, that's probably one of the best NBA games of the year. Just totally well played by both sides, and gives us a good window, I think, into how these two teams are going to stack up moving forward. You know, big X factor coming into this. We kind of knew how these two teams would match up, but we didn't know how Durant would factor in. Now we do, and we know how the Cavs are going to try to defend him, and how they're going to try to work around them having Curry and Durant and Klay Thompson on the floor at the same time. Just a really, really well played game by everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it lived up to every expectation I had for it, and there's nothing about that game to me that didn't really live up to the hype. And there's just so much, you know, you could look at on both sides of things that went wrong. I mean, the foul, like Jefferson's maybe trip at the end of the game. I mean, he definitely tripped him, but, you know, Jefferson and Shumpert just being useless offensively for most of that game. Curry, you know, not really having a Steph Curry-like game on a very big stage. But before we get into everything, I want to ask you something, and then we'll get into the actual details of this. Did Russell Westbrook actually yell, "Thank you, Kyrie," when he ran off the floor?
I mean, he definitely said it.
Did he say he didn't? I'm like, Russ, just enjoy the petty.
Yeah, I there was something yesterday about timestamps of when that video or when he finished his warm ups and when the game ended, and it's like, dude, let's just have fun with this. Like, yeah. it doesn't matter. I still want Kevin Durant to have to answer what he thought of that. And then when he gives some total, like, just way up answer that tries to deflect it, I want Russ to be asked about that, and I want him to fake trip as he walks away.
Yeah, I do too. It'd be great. But this game, as I mentioned in the Fear of the newsletter today, and pretty much every time I've talked about this game in real life and on Twitter, this game had everything. So what Trevor and I are going to do is we are going to each give, I think, three takeaways for this game, because I think there's a lot to start off with. There's so many different things you could cover. There's stuff we won't even get to because I think there's just a lot of interesting things coming out of this game. But Trevor, we'll start with you. What's your first takeaway from the Cavs' win over the Warriors, which, if you somehow were living under a rock, the Cavs won 109-108 with Kyrie Irving hitting a game winner in the fourth quarter. It's almost like we've seen that before.
Yeah, my first big takeaway is that the Cavs absolutely will not be able to compete with the Warriors if they have Kyrie Irving playing point guard, because he's not good defensively.
Oh my god.
Because, you know, you know,
what a savage.
Helping hold Steph Curry to 15 points on 11 shots, having seven steals in this game, digging down in the on a crucial possession in the fourth quarter and deflecting an entry pass in the post that caused a fast break, getting that game winner off a timeout off of what was probably one of the worst drawn up out of timeout plays I've seen the Cavs run this year. It's nice that he hit that shot, but like, why was that the shot that you're taking? That was a little confusing, but still, I'm running out of things to say about Kyrie and whether or not he's the most frustrating thing is that we have to have the argument over and over again about whether or not he's even good.
Yeah, and also there's this thing now that's happening. It's like, well, okay, do you want him in the regular season or the postseason? Like, the dude's just really good. Like, I think, like, just splitting hairs over this so much is crazy. And I think you, when you look, the guys that he is compared to, I almost think, like, it's the thing with him not being, like, a passing point guard, quote-unquote, I think still just plays his kind of whatever impact. And two, every guy that he is relatively in the same class with, and that he has accomplished more than at this point, has their own flaw. Like, a very distinct flaw, like he kind of does on defense. Damian Lillard is worse than defense on Kyrie. I will stand by that. Like, he is worse than defense on Kyrie. John Wall cannot shoot in an NBA that values shooting more than ever. John Wall's having a great year. He's a great player. He cannot shoot. He can't space the floor from the one spot at all. Kyle Lowry is really good. His conditioning, not great. Just other things about Kyle Lowry, he's not perfect. Like, they have flaws. Every one of these guys has flaws. Kemba Walker's having a great year. Kemba Walker can't do what Kyrie Irving just did. I don't think. I really don't think that.
Yeah, it's just, like, people want to rag on Kyrie's defense, and it's justified. I mean, on ball, he's not the best defender. He can get overwhelmed at the point of attack. He can get exposed by more creative offensive backcourt players. You know, that's all true. But to act like he brings absolutely no value on the defensive end of the floor is, frankly, at this point, it's insane. Like, Kyrie is a very good off-ball defender. He tries very hard on that end. He's very good at anticipating passing lanes. He tips passes pretty well, which is great for a guy who doesn't really have elite length at the point guard position. And, you know, he definitely is giving consistent effort off the ball this year. You know, he still kind of lags on the ball, but off the ball, he's usually locked in. He doesn't get beat backdoor anymore as often as he has. When he gets taken into the post, he can hold his own. He rotates pretty well at this point. You know, it's just like, he's exactly serviceable for how the Cavs want to use him defensively, for what he brings offensively. I mean, Kyrie Irving doesn't have to be your best defender or your second best defender in order to be an impactful player because of what he brings on the offensive end. He's your second best scorer. And
I mean, it's kind of telling too that end of the game, you go to Kyrie. Like, Kyrie is the bucket getter late in games.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it. And it, and I said this yesterday, but he didn't have a good shooting game. I mean, he had 25 points on 27 shots, looked a little bit flat on his jumper throughout the second and third quarters in particular. But, you know, the other thing is, like, he's not just a shooter. Like, he didn't shoot well yesterday, and he found other ways to get involved. He had 10 assists. He had the 7 steals. And, you know, he didn't back down from shooting the ball, which is his greatest strength, even though it wasn't going well. I said this yesterday, but he's kind of getting into that Ray Allen tier of shooters where it's like, it doesn't matter. Kyrie Irving could be one of 14 from the field. I'm still fine with him getting an open 3-point look.
Yeah.
Because he's that good of a shooter. The mechanics are that good. Everything's or he's confident enough that, you know, on that 15th shot, I still have about the same confidence that it's going to go in as I did on the first 14.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Also, Kyrie Irving went the line once yesterday. Like, that's pretty unusual for him. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a tech free throw, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And he still played this great game, made an impact. I think labeling him as this one-dimensional player is sort of... I think there's, like, as you said, there are a lot of problems with that view of him. Like, I think he's clearly more than that. He is clearly... has a beyond that. Is that his best trait? Absolutely. His ability to just get buckets at a high volume is clearly his best skill. He's not just that player. I mean, when he was picking steals on Sunday, when he was just making, like, smart defensive reads. He was seeing, like, kind of errant passes, and he was aware, and he was just taking advantage of lazy passes from the Warriors. And, I mean, is Kyrie Irving going to become Mike Conley or Chris Paul at point guard? No, he's not going to be that on the defensive end. But he can just make these basic defensive reads, and that's really all you need of him. And the 10 assists, I think we're seeing something with him. He's had a couple games like this in the past week, and this is just my thesis, and it's a small sample size, and I have to watch a bunch of film and see if this plays out. I think he's starting to abandon the mid-range a little bit more, because we've seen him take a lot of elbow jumpers and take a lot of pull-up jumpers the first 4-plus years of his career. I think we're starting to see him take on a little bit of a James Harden-type offensive strategy, go to the rim more, and look to dish out of those spots when he can create open looks for others. And he's finding guys like Channing Frye, like Kevin Love, like J.R. Smith when he comes back, like Amon Shumpert. And he's going to get more assists that way. And I think if you're going to say there was a complaint about Kyrie as a point guard, it's that he wasn't going to get a lot of assists. I think if he takes less mid-range elbow jumpers, he's going to just get more assists by the virtue of the fact that defense are going to collapse on him when he gets to the rim.
Yeah, he's just finding... I'm just finding that he's seeing the floor a little bit better. That's the biggest thing that I've seen over the past couple of games is, you're right, it does look like he's coming off of that high screen, getting into about the free throw line or the elbow. And I think the game's just opened up for him a little bit. He's finding cutters. He's finding floor spacers. He's developing a little bit better reading. Tristan Thompson coming off the pick and roll. There has been, I think, a little change in kind of how he sees the floor over the last couple of weeks, and whether that's, you know, something from Tyronn Lue, whether that's something that he's noticing, whether that's something that's just kind of his maturation process. It'll remain to be seen. But, you know, it's kind of funny that he's had, I think, three games where he's kind of floated around 10 assists in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, he's had 13 steals in the last couple of games. It's almost like he's going exactly against everybody's complaints about him. It's like, oh, you think I can't do this? Well, here's a game on the biggest stage where I'm going to throw up not just 25 points, but also 6 rebounds, 10 assists, and 7 steals. What do you have to say now? And just the final thing I want to say about this, and then we can kind of get off beating this dead horse.
This is a good horse to beat, though. Like, I will.
Yeah, we're not exactly reinventing the wheel as Cavs fans complaining about Kyrie Irving, but the reason that people make the comment, "Oh, why are Cavs fans so insane about Kyrie Irving?" Can we please just accept that, like, he's on this level? Like, can we please just not have it be, like, a problem that he's in the conversation with guys like Lillard, Lowry, and Wall? Like, I'm tired. Like, after this game, it's another game of, like, do we really have to listen to things like
Kyrie Irving? But he hasn't progressed, Trevor. He hasn't progressed.
Right.
He's leveled out.
Exactly. He hasn't progressed. He's never going to be a good enough defender for this Cavs team to win a title, even though he's already done that. Like, it's
crazy.
What's your first takeaway? Because we need to get off of this.
All right, so I'm going to go to the other side of this, because I think there are a couple things we need to nitpick if looking at the Cavs here. And I think the first thing that I look at, I have the ESPN box score up right now. The Cavs' depth is a little bit of an issue in a 7-game series, I think. the Warriors have just a ton of guys they can play. Obviously, they're going to lean on their best players a lot, but, you know, they play guys like David West. I mean, JaVale actually had some moments where he was useful. The only guys they didn't really play were Patrick McCaw and Vergeau on their roster. The Cavs only played eight guys. Some of that is because they would play nine, but J.R. Smith is, of course, hurt. Because I still think DeAndre Liggins would probably get minutes in this game. I think it makes sense to give him minutes in this game, and we're probably going to get into him a little bit, but the Cavs don't have a ton of bodies. You're going to have LeBron play 40 minutes in this game. Kyrie played 44. I think Love, if he doesn't get in foul trouble, probably plays more than 32 minutes yesterday. I think Channing Frye could even get above 20 in certain games. Richard Jefferson played 29 minutes. Amon Shumpert, 29 minutes. I think you're going to see the Cavs have to maybe find another body here. Because the Warriors, I think, are going to have more bodies to throw into this game, and that kind of matters. My solution is this, though. I think it's a lot harder than people will admit for the Cavs to go trade or sign a wing. Firmly believe that. I think there are two options, and I think maybe you could do them both. One, and I've said this on the pod a bunch, getting a Mario Chalmers would make some sense. You have to get rid of a roster spot, and you probably don't want to just do it by cutting a guy because that costs a bunch of tax money. But getting him would allow Amon Shumpert to play a more natural two-guard role in the rotation that I think would help shore up J.R. Smith's absence a bit more than he can do right now. The other option that I think has value is I think the Cavs need to find a way to rehabilitate Mike Dunleavy. Didn't play yesterday. I think there were a lot of people that maybe haven't watched the Cavs a lot that were very confused by that. I mean, I saw that at least on my Twitter feed, that people, that your average NBA fan or maybe guys that haven't watched the Cavs more than four or five times were a bit confused by that. It's no mistake, and there's no reason to think he's been good this year. He's been bad. His back hasn't looked great. I mean, he just hasn't moved that well. He hasn't shot that well. I think there's clearly something you can do to get him back into the full things, or at least find out over the next 25 games before the trade deadline. If there is something there, I think with Mike Dunleavy, I think you start playing him more with LeBron. I think you start playing him more with Kyrie. Play him in the lineups where he's going to be the most set up for success, where guys are going to be able to find him when he's wide open, and you're going to fill the role he was supposed to kind of fill. Invest some time into him and see if you can make him a rotation wing, and I think maybe this depth issue isn't as big of a deal. Because Mike Dunleavy, when he is healthy, is a super useful player in this for the Cavs and in this particular matchup.
Yeah, I definitely think Dunleavy is like the easiest route to, solving the depth issue. And obviously getting JR healthy is paramount to this too, because that gives you 10 guys. It gives you the requisite number of wings that you want to have available. And, you know, it makes things a little bit easier for the Cavs to, be able to work different lineups, try different things if things aren't working. I think that you're right. Having Dunleavy does kind of change things, because while he's not going to be like an A-plus defender, like an Andre Iguodala, he can at least use his length to bother the Warriors' wings a little bit, particularly when Draymond Green's out on the perimeter. I think that Dunleavy can be a useful defender against him, just because he has the length to be able to cover him. He has the strength and also has the attitude to really be able to stick with Draymond and get in Draymond's head a little bit. Yeah. But I actually want to counter that a little bit. Yeah, the Warriors played 12 guys yesterday, and the Cavs played eight. And while that's a sign of, yeah, the Warriors have more depth, I'd argue that the Cavs know a little bit more what they want to do against the Warriors.
I think that's true. I think that makes sense. I think especially you saw them attack certain lineups. I think you saw them know what they were going to do defensively. And I think the tighter rotation does lend itself to a more concise strategy. But I think I just kind of assume that, like, what we saw yesterday with the Warriors kind of doing some things that I don't necessarily think they would do in the finals. Or, you know, like, I think when they tighten up their rotation a little bit, I think that depth thing, the depth advantage kind of is going to be maximized a little bit in a seven-game series when they know that they're going to block a certain minutes for certain guys and maybe play their small lineups a little bit more.
See, I'd agree with you, but, I mean,
Kerr playing Anderson Vergeau in the finals last year? Is that kind of like where your head goes?
Yeah, that's good. That's exactly where my head goes. I mean, Kerr has not shown to this point that he knows what he wants to do lineup wise against the Caps. You know, last year playing Bergeau and Ian Clark in the final three games, in crucial moments in those games. And, you know, yesterday, like, why is Kevon Looney on the floor at all? Why is Sean Livingston getting, you know, crucial final possessions when he honestly didn't really have a good game at all yesterday? Like, it doesn't seem like they have a coherent, real plan for who's going to be the fifth guy for them. They obviously know who the four are: Green, Durant, Curry, Thompson. They're going to be on the floor in crucial moments. They don't really know who that fifth guy is. You know, for stretches it was Iguodala, for stretches it was David West, for stretches it was Sean Livingston. The Cavs know who their guys are going to be in those crucial moments. They know that they're going to go to Richard Jefferson when they have crucial defensive possessions, and you know, especially if Kevin Love's in foul trouble, they're gonna put Jefferson on the floor. They know when they need a good offensive lineup, they're gonna go to Channing Frye. They know that Iman Shumpert's gonna be able to provide something on both ends now. Even though he wasn't very good offensively yesterday, I thought he had a very good defensive game, and I liked where his mind was at on the offensive end of the floor. He was making smart plays even if he wasn't hitting shots. I really just feel like that's more of a sign that while the Cavs, you know, they could have gone deeper into their bench, they're treating this like a finals game. They're going to their lineups that they know are going to work, and they're going to stick with that. They're not going to try to experiment around, which I think the Warriors did a little bit too much, especially as the Cavs were coming back. I really thought that, you know, the Warriors would have been a little bit smarter to kind of ride the same lineups, or at least picked something and stuck with it for a few minutes rather than trying to kind of cycle through guys. I think that's a big takeaway for the game for me, is that the Cavs kind of knew what they were going to do in this game rotation wise, and the Warriors didn't, and that was a big surprise to me.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. That doesn't surprise me too much, because I think Ty Lue, as much as he does go off feel, he tightens things up when it really kind of matters. And it does get sort of strict at times. And I kind of did get the sense that the Cavs were going to take this pretty seriously and play this more like a finals game. I think you saw that. So, Trevor, what's your second takeaway?
My second takeaway is kind of going right alongside with that, and that is that the Cavs only played eight guys, but the four that we were a little bit worried about, I think all four of Wiggins, Fry, Jefferson, and Shumpert, while they didn't have the best games, they proved that they can be on the floor with this team. And the biggest one for me was Wiggins. You know, the fact that he was able to play 22 minutes, he was able to give pretty good defense against Thompson, and even at times when he got switched on to Durant, I thought that he played a very good defensive game. He did the little stuff that we kind of talked about on the last pod, that he was going to be able to do. He kind of knew exactly what his role was going to be. Didn't try to do anything over the top on the offensive end. Was sound on the defensive end. And I thought that, you know, a big takeaway for me was, if you can play DeAndre Wiggins against the Warriors, that's a pretty good sign for you moving forward when it comes to J.R. Smith's health.
Yeah, I like that too. I think the caveat I'm going to throw in there is that Richard Jefferson, Iman Shumpert, and DeAndre Wiggins combined to make three shots on 21 attempts. And the Cavs won, partially because they have these overwhelming offensive players. Good God, that probably is not going to be something that could happen four times in a seven-game series. Of course, you get J.R. Smith back, and you hope his shooting matters more. This is maybe Iman Shumpert's worst shooting game of the year, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And certainly felt that way because of the magnitude of the game. But not a good offensive performance. Jefferson's two makes were his dunks, which were amazing. Like these two, yeah. Like just throwback dunks. We get one of those a year, and we got two in one game, including that one on Clay. I thought the second one was better, for the record, the one on Clay.
Yeah,
it was just an absolute smash by Jefferson. But they're not going to win a 7-game series if their role players don't shoot that well. Fry was great, and I think I really really like how he can impact this series. I really 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 do. I think he's going to pull whatever big he's against out of the paint. He's going to create room for others. The Warriors are going to have a hard time stopping themselves from collapsing on LeBron and Kyrie and not leaving him open. I think he's going to be a huge, huge player in the series. And it's almost the role I expected him to play last year, but then he didn't play very much in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with Fry is just the fact that you put him and Love on the floor at the same time, and Zaza and JaVale can't be out there. Like, they just simply cannot be out there because you're taking away the one value that those two players have against a team like the Cavs, and that's their size underneath the basket. You know, when they have to be out around chasing Love and Fry on the perimeter, they're not providing that rim protection for guys. Offensive end, they aren't impactful enough to really be able to take advantage of what you're giving up on the interior. I mean, Love is frankly probably a better rebounder than both of those players, and Fry can hold his own on the defensive end. He's done a pretty good job of that this year. I just think that he. You know, he brings an X factor of making the Warriors go to their small lineups, which, you know, those are their better lineups, but it takes them out of what they want to do rotation wise. When they need to get one of those guys a break, Fry needs to be on the floor, in my opinion. And I think that continually puts pressure on the Warriors to lean on their small ball lineups, which are going to be the lineups that are going to give up more points on the interior, which is going to be better for the Cavs. And going back to Jefferson, I mean, yeah, he only shot 2 of 11, was 0 of 5 from three-point range, but everything that Jefferson did positive on the floor in this game was completely psychological. I mean, the fact that he was it's kind of funny because he was +6 in the +-, and you could argue that +6 is 2 for the dunk on Durant, 2 for the dunk on Clay, and 2 for the points that he didn't allow because he got tangled up with Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
On the final possession.
Yeah, right there.
I just felt like he's a guy that you want on the floor in these situations, just because while he is older, while he's not going to be able to compete athletically at the highest level with these guys, while he's not going to, he's not going to knock down all the same shots that these guys are going to knock down. Like, the confidence that he has on the floor just elevates this team when he's out there.
Yeah. His ability to switch, huge. Like, that was essential. Yeah. On that final possession, if that's somebody else that isn't as long as him and as strong as him switching there, Durant's probably getting a clean look.
Yeah, he was 2 of 11 from the field, and I felt like he had probably one of the better games that I've seen him play in the last month or so. In that game, just because he didn't back down from anything, and what he brought defensively well canceled out what he brought offensively.
Do you think he should have got a tech for the wink?
It's a wink. is one thing, and I did really love the Nets blogger who after the game tweeted out a gif of a dunk that Jefferson had in the 2003-04 season, where he basically takes the same exact baseline drive and yams on Mark Blunt in basically the exact same position, and it was just like then and now, and he had basically the same exact reaction to it too.
He's the absolute best.
Yeah.
All right. So my second takeaway is Kevin Love was super good in this game. There should be no more concerns, I think, about exactly how much you can play him. Are there issues with him being attacked on pick and roll that we maybe didn't see as much in this game? Yeah. but he also did a really nice job switching a couple times. I think it was like in the first quarter, it was him on Curry again, and Curry threw up like kind of a junky jump shot, and I was like, oh hey, I've seen this before. Love, 32 minutes, 20 points, 6 boards. Got in some foul trouble, which I think is something that I think just how he's going to be used is probably going to happen. I think that might kind of be inevitable especially if he's going to challenge shots. If he just lets guys dunk, he can stay out of foul trouble, and maybe that's the smarter approach, but also just that's not the instinctual thing to do. But he's going to be really good in this series. He, like you said, him and Fry together is going to throw as Pachulia and McGee off the floor. He's going to post up really well. Against the starters, he did a really nice job on Zaza for the most part. And that's all you need him to do on defense and get in the starting lineup, because I thought Thompson did a pretty decent job against Draymond. I think Love, just how well he's played this year, how well he played yesterday, even with the foul trouble, he spaced the floor. I think everyone is probably going to shoot better in a normal game. I thought LeBron was a little, I mean, he made 12 shots, but like LeBron's shooting is probably going to be better. He missed some layups. I think Kyrie's probably going to shoot better on an average game. Love's going to shoot better on an average game. I just think Kevin Love has asserted himself in this series in a way that mattered more than him stopping Curry in the finals. I think it doesn't mean more, but it's a bigger, more impactful Kevin Love than we've seen when these two teams have played over the past 2.5 years.
Yeah, it was just a overall really sound game from Kevin Love. I felt like he, you know, he's found his place on the offensive end, and I think that's the biggest thing for him. And I think that translated well yesterday. He knew where his spots were going to be. He knew that he was going to get those open looks, and when he needed it to fire, when he needed to look off. And he did a bunch of little things that don't show up in the box score. I felt he made some really nice kind of extra passes within the flow of the offense that weren't necessarily assists, but also, freed up more open looks down the line. I felt like defensively, he kind of got taken advantage of underneath the basket, but when he was forced to defend away from the basket, I felt like he did a decent job. He kind of took what came to him in this game. And I think that's the biggest thing with Love is you want to see him. You don't really want to see Love forcing the issue against a team like the Warriors. You'd rather see LeBron and Kyrie kind of dictate things, and Love, you know, just be comfortable at kind of getting the open looks that he's going to get and taking advantage when he does get the ball. And I felt like he did a good job of that yesterday. It was also nice to see that he was going to, able to come on in that fourth quarter when he was kind of being subbed out back and forth with Richard Jefferson. You know, he didn't really get upset, didn't get frustrated by that. He realized that, you know, okay, this is what's going to give us the best chance to win. I just have to do what I need to do offensively, and I can let Richard do what he needs to do defensively, and we'll be in a good spot. And I felt like that's the biggest thing, is like, you can tell in the on-court demeanor with Love and the way that he plays that he's all in on this team and this team's goals. And, you know, I think that translated well to his play yesterday.
100% agree with that. I think he's a guy that I think is going to play a big role in a potential series between these two teams, and I kind of can't wait to see it. So, my next takeaway is kind of... Oh, sorry, Victor, you're up. My bad, I didn't mean to cut you. You're up.
my third takeaway, going back to the Warriors side of things, and it's one that's not really surprising, because at this point we've all kind of come to expect that this is going to happen. Man, it's really funny how Draymond Green by himself can let a team back into the game. I felt like he played pretty well on the offensive end. He had 16 points on 9 shots. He kind of did the same thing that that Kevin Love did. Hit the open shots that he was able to, take, and did a nice job actually finishing in traffic. He was 6-6 on contested field goals from the NBA.com player tracking box score. But I mean, had the tech earlier in the game, 5 fouls, 6 turnovers. Like at this point, he's just a punchline in this series. Like. He's a guy that the Cavs know that they can get in his, inside of his head, and they know that they can take advantage of him even when he's having a really, really good game, as he did yesterday through most facets of it. I really felt like, you know, he didn't really step up in the fourth quarter when the Warriors really needed him to make some defensive stops. He really didn't do what, you know, you would expect from a guy who's perennially on the Defensive Player of the Year ballot. I really just felt when the Cavs got down 13, I was expecting, okay, Draymond's going to do something that's going to let the Cavs back in the game here. And he did. Like, he didn't really step up defensively. He let Kyrie Irving and LeBron James kind of dictate the pace and finish inside. And, you know, I felt like that's something that is going to continue to be an issue until it's not for the Warriors, is can Draymond Green play a game against the Cavs without being the bad parts of Draymond Green?
Yeah. I think that's pretty fair. I think Draymond, if he's on, though, is going to, like, he's going to make a big impact on this series in one way or another. I think he's too good to not, you know. I kind of want to see how he plays at home when the Cavs play the Warriors again in 3 weeks. But I think you're right. I thought from the moment he got on the floor yesterday, when he picked up that early technical foul, I was like, okay, this is going to be a rough game for Draymond. But, if he's on and he's playing within himself, I mean, going to be a really tough thing for the Cavs, I think, to figure out in some ways. But, of course, I think we learned yesterday at least a little bit do have counters. So, my last takeaway is, and this is not anything surprising, I guess, I will accept no other finals matchup. I understand there are other good teams in the NBA. The Raptors are good. The Clippers are good. The Spurs are good. The Celtics, I guess, are good. There is literally.
I watched that game, and they you could definitely tell the Celtics. You could definitely tell the Celtics were playing at noon on a Sunday in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah,
that's all right. I'll say.
Yeah, there is literally no other finals matchup to me that is going to be something I am going to be super amped about watching. This series has how many really great stars? It has Kyrie, LeBron, Kevin Love, Steph Curry, Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. It has Kerr. It has Iguodala. It'd be the first three-time finals matchup. It has this regular season game that sets the tone for it, no matter what happens in 3 weeks. It has last year's finals. It has the year before finals. This is the best rivalry in the NBA. It is probably the best rivalry in sports right now. It's the most competitive. There is no other finals that I want to see, and I honestly don't think there's two teams on this level. There are people that I really respect that have been throwing out the idea that the Raptors might be able to compete with the Cavs in the East. Bro, the Raptors on their best day cannot beat this Cavs team in a 7-game series at all. Like, I will refute that idea until my blogging days are over. And I don't think there's anyone in the West that's beating the Warriors. I think we're going to get this, and I think it's the only finals matchup to me that is going to be a fitting conclusion to having these two teams exist at the same time. I need to see that 7-game series again.
Yeah, I think that you're 100% correct in that there's not really another team that's going to be able to challenge either of these two in a 7-game series. I mean, the Raptors, for as great as they are, and they're having a fantastic year, they're a better team than they were last year, they still don't match up well with this Cavs team, and that's evidenced by the fact that the Cavs have already beaten them 3 times. You know, they still don't have an answer for LeBron James at the end of the day. They do not have an answer for when the Cavs decide to go small with Tristan Thompson, LeBron at the four and three wings. Just because, you know, they don't have a guy who can step up and defend LeBron in that capability. And on the west side, you know, the only team that I really think is going to give the Warriors any issues is going to be the Rockets. And I think that's by virtue of the Rockets playing such a similar style to the Cavs, where they're this really high octane offensive team that has a few decent defensive players that can kind of get in and throw a wrench in what the Warriors want to do. But again, that you're talking about the Rockets defense holding down the Warriors for seven games. I think these two teams are just on another plane. On both ends of the floor from the rest of the NBA, they just match up so well with each other. There's so many different storylines that go into it. There's so much entertainment that comes from these games every time these two teams play. I wouldn't accept anything less than this as a finals matchup, barring injury.
Like, could you imagine watching Clippers Raptors? After like seeing this, like I just can't, like I just yeah. I can't, like I don't, I, and I understand like that the like the Raptors are good, like they are legitimately a very good team. I think they're the second best team in the East. Like everything you said, they just, there's no way they're matching up with the Cavs. I know the head that like their numbers in some ways or instances are better. Just tell me how they actually beat the Cavs in a seven game series, and like there's no reasonable way to me that I think they do it without going out and trading for somebody. Like, I just don't think they're right now. They can't.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's the same thing with the Western Conference opponents. Like, there's no way that the Spurs defense, as good as it is in the regular season, is going to translate to beating the Warriors in the seven-game series. You know, we have to be skeptical of the Clippers until they give us a reason not to be skeptical. And I just think that the Rockets and the Jazz, if they're fully healthy, like they just don't have enough horses on one end, the Rockets defensively, the Jazz offensively, to be able to compete. So, you know, I think that we're headed for a third straight Cavs Warriors finals, and I don't know anybody that's upset by that.
I mean, that there are certainly fan bases that are going to be upset by that, but I think like then they'll watch the finals and be like, oh yeah, this is great. So the last thing I'm going to leave this on is this. This is from Jason Lloyd's Always Must Read Final Thoughts. He wrote this. Quote, this is his number 16 point if you want to go read it yourself. And there's one specific thing I'm going to pull from this. The Cavs trailed by 7 when he left, in reference to LeBron. They trailed by 8 when James returned, chopping that 14-point deficit nearly in half. The Warriors had won each of their last 166 games when leading by at least 14 points in the fourth quarter, according to ESPN stats and information. The Cavs did that, and it was the same way they won the finals with Kyrie Irving hitting a late fourth-quarter shot. Like, good God, the series has, like, every layer. The Cavs are the perfect foil for the Warriors. Kyrie's been is making his name on beating the Warriors in the fourth quarter. Like, again, I need to see seven games of this, and I need to see another close game seven. It's wherever it is. Like, we need that. I think. I just don't think there's anything that would come close to the dramatic and the historical implications, and just, it's the perfect finals for this current NBA, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and just there's so much more that you can kind of dive in with. I mean, we went this entire podcast and didn't mention once that Kevin Durant had 36 and 15.
Yeah, like, and the Cavs probably, and on 23 shots, he went the line 12 times, and I don't think the Cavs really, unless LeBron is just going to chase him around, are going to be able to stop him. And we didn't even talk about the Cavs used a 2-3 zone for a little bit, and it kind of worked.
Yeah, there's so much to dissect with this matchup, just because it is so good, and that's why we're fortunate that we get to come back in 2 weeks and do this again. You know, I think that having another matchup this close to it means that these two teams they're gonna be basically the same as they were in this game, and you know, we're really gonna get to see
I think a glimpse into how these two teams are going to adjust to each other. I think the Warriors are going to do things a little bit differently on the 16th. I think the Cavs will do things a little bit differently on the 16th. And I really think that that's gonna put you in a unique situation, as opposed to, like, if this game was like late February in Golden State, like it'd be another thing. But this close together, I think that this is gonna be at the same level when these two teams play again.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's gonna be it for today's show. Trevor, thanks for coming on. And before we let you go, did you get everything you wanted for Christmas? I mean, did you get everything that you needed to? As an adult, hoping to just, you know, get basically essential things.
Man, I mean, I got home from the Bay Area to Chicago, and that most years that's enough for me.
Fair enough. I got a pair of sweatpants that I'm probably gonna wear for like every time. They're gonna be like my blogging from home pants now. Like, they're the most comfortable thing I've ever worn in my life. Shout out to Homage.
Basically the same thing, man.
Yeah, I mean, Homage, your sweatpants are great, and if you want to sponsor this podcast, like, at me, lockedoncavs@gmail.com. Like, I'm very open to promoting your sweatpants and your vintage NBA t-shirts on this podcast. I'm just saying. But, Trevor, thank you for coming on. Happy Boxing Day. And hopefully, I think Tottenham Hotspur plays today, so hopefully they play today.
Yeah,
It's a good day. It's a good day to watch soccer, opposed to like the Cavs playing the Pistons later today.
Yeah, I remember early in the season when the schedule got released, I picked out 10 games that the Cavs were definitely going to lose this year. Today was definitely one of them.
Yeah,
this game I think was my number one choice as a guaranteed loss this season. Do not watch this game.
Yeah, don't watch this game. On that note, I will not be posting a podcast tomorrow. I'm gonna take. I go back to work tomorrow for my day job. Not gonna record anything about this game tonight. Just listen to this Warriors podcast. I think that's gonna be more impactful than breaking down this second half of a back to back game in Detroit. But we'll be back on Wednesday with a mailbag pod, so drop those questions into lockedoncavs@gmail.com or to @lockedoncavs on Twitter. We'll be back then. We'll be back daily after that. But I hope everyone out there had a great holiday, whether you celebrated Christmas or if you celebrated Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever else. If you just, you know, had a day of Chinese food and movies, that's great too. But thanks for Trevor for coming on. Hope you guys enjoyed the game. I'm going to watch that game again because I need to just see it again. But we'll be back again Wednesday with a mailbag podcast, so get those questions in. So for Trevor, for Chris, for Locked On Cavs, enjoy.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how!
At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.